Hey guys, welcome to Hope It Helps. Today's guest is Chang Sup Chin. Chang is the CEO of 1004 Gourmet, the most renowned Asian supermarket in the UAE. He has been an ambassador for Asian cuisine and culture and consistently provides his customers with new products from across Southeast Asia, including Japan, Korea, China, and Thailand. With over 15 years of experience working in the F&B industry, he has expanded the business to now also supply ingredients to restaurants and retailers such as Carrefour and Zumo. During this episode, we discuss his journey running an Asian supermarket. We talk about the F&B industry and how that has evolved over the years in the UAE. And lastly, what are the key factors that contribute to the success of a restaurant? And the last message he wanted to share is don't take everything so seriously, because in the big picture, nothing is worth the emotional baggage you put on yourself. Please welcome to the show, Mr. Chang Sup Chin.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. So guys, for the people who don't know, me and Chang got connected through a mutual friend, Tariq, who's also been on the show. And I found out recently that he is the CEO and owner of 104 Gourmet. So anyone in Dubai, if you know what 104 Gourmet is, you know what I'm talking about. It's an Asian supermarket that has... When I walk in there, bro, it's honestly like I feel like I'm in Candyland. I'm just like, I don't know what all these products are, and I want to try this, and I want to make this. So I've been a huge fan for a very long time, and a customer. So when he connected us, I'm like, man, I have to have him on the show. I'd love to hear his story, how it started. And also, I know you have Ugly Burger, Noodles. So there's like, you're pretty, you know, involved in the food industry here, and I love food. So I always like to speak to people in the industry to learn, because from outside I'm just a customer. I'm like, okay, that's good, but I don't know. Omar actually opened my eyes to a lot of what goes on behind the scenes.
Exactly, yeah. I was gonna say that.
There's a lot more to it. But before we get into everything, man, why don't we give all of us a little bit of background about yourself, and we'll take it from there.
Cool. So my name is Chang Sup Chin. I grew up in Dubai, actually. So we came here as a family in 92. Before that, we were in Saudi. But our main business is 1004 Gourmet. We started off as a Korean supermarket in Barsha. And in 2018, we moved to our new spot in the Onyx Tower in the Greens. And a lot of stuff happened in between, man. So we started to sell to... When I joined in 2010, actually, after we opened, we started to sell to restaurants. We branched out to import from different countries. We set up our online website, warehouses. So that's all the kind of gritty stuff that happens in the back. But we supply to a lot of restaurants. We supply to local supermarkets and retailers like Carrefour. We have our own shop. We have a small kind of convenience store style shop in Depachka in the Nakheel Mall. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping to open in Abu Dhabi in like a month and a half.
Oh, wow. That's awesome, man. Congrats. Insha,
thank you. We'll see. It's so hard to open concepts in general.
Yeah.
Super excited to be here. Thank you for having me, and can't wait to, yeah.
Awesome stuff, man. Let's jump to this first, since you kind of brought it up. So I know you have, like we just mentioned, the Ugly Burger and Ugly Noodle, and in Dubai, lots of these kind of pop-up-ish kind of concepts keep coming up. So my question to you is, I know, so one is burgers, one is noodles. So it's a different product. But as time goes on, like once you've done one, does it get easier, or is each product different, completely ball-game? Like it's almost like a brand new concept.
That's a very, very good question. I guess it does get easier because you go through the obstacles and you learn from your mistakes. And you know, obviously, when you set up an operation, you want to streamline everything so that it's more efficient. And to just give you a background of Ugly Burger, it started during COVID. So one of our partners and my best friend, Young Rak, he owns Shogun, which is a Korean restaurant in Media City. And during the lockdown, you know, being a Korean restaurant, you need to be, it's more interactive, right? You're grilling the meats.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's more kind of dine-in focused as opposed to delivery focused. And during the lockdown, obviously, you know, people were not able to come to this restaurant. And I had another friend, Eric, who's our other partner in Ugly Burger, and he was looking for a kitchen space. And I put him to together, and I was like, listen, he's got a kitchen. You wanted a kitchen. You guys should work on something together. I actually had no intention of working with them just because I was just busy with my own thing.
Yeah.
But because you know, we obviously have great synergy. Everybody has their own expertise, and they're kind of my mutual friends. So I thought it would be a good idea to, like, yeah, just start this fun project and this journey. And so, you know, we started off as a, we did like 3 months of just eating Mad Burgers, man. Like, just, oh my goodness. And we're actually opening Ugly Burger. We closed our shop in Darwasal and we're opening in the Kiel Mall soon.
Oh, no way. That's awesome.
So we're doing like upgrades on every single thing. I have a tasting later on. I had one yesterday and it's just not good for my diet. But to be honest, it's the journey that's really the fun part of this, creating brands and stories and recipes and creating delicious dishes and things like that. That's always going to be there. But again, like having managers in place that can micromanage on behalf of us, and yeah, having a social media team and a marketing team and a design team that can actually, you know, create these nice visuals that represents us towards the customers. And so having that in place definitely helps us. I think without that, I think it might have been impossible, you know. Having the right people around us and things like that's definitely part big part of the process. It does get easier, but I guess, yeah, having streamlined everything, having put systems in place, that's what makes it easier.
Yeah, no, yeah. And that, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think you made a really good point about setting up not only the foundations and the operations, how you would want any kind of concept that you come up with to work. And you touched on it very importantly, that the people, I think, in the team around you, that is, again, at the end of the day, that's what makes or breaks any business.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, when we talk about businesses and we're like, you know, because we're all business people and we love, all we do is just talk about businesses. It's kind of sad, actually, yeah, you know, like, but it's what excites us. And every time we talk about a concept that's failed, you know, I always say it's bad management. You know,
really, do you think that's what it comes down to most of the time? 100%
in any business, whether it's mine, you know, I've made mistakes. When our employee makes a mistake, I blame myself, right? Because, okay, that person directly made a mistake, but I went through I made the decision to hire that person, to train that person. Mm. And if that person makes a mistake again and again, you know, it's still on me. You know, I think having that accountability is so important in running a business. And a lot of people overlook that. They blame other factors and they blame the market and things like that. But no, it's, in the end, it's up to the owner, in my opinion.
I really like that, man. I think that is one thing that it's very easy to point the finger and blame a person, an audience, whatever. There's so many things you could come up with to, as a reason or let's say an excuse for why this didn't work. But I love that you bring it back, and it's at the end of the day, I'm the one running the show. So even if there's mistakes within, at the end of the day, it's my fault,
100%. You know,
which I respect. And I think that mindset helps you see, I think, the bigger picture at the same time too. You know, it's not just about like a plug and fix thing. There's maybe more behind it that might need to be put in place so that these kind of things don't happen in the future.
Exactly. Yeah. They're just life's lessons.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
And it's actually funny because once you start blaming other people, I feel like you kind of hold grudges and you have emotional, you're invested emotionally into whatever has happened. But once you start blaming yourself, you're like, okay, fine. It's my mistake. Hopefully my business didn't fail from this mistake. And I'm going to learn from it and move on and make sure that doesn't happen again.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. So,
yeah.
Awesome stuff, man. I wanted to kind of go back to the beginning a little bit because I don't know. I've read online, so I know a bit about the story, but I want to hear it. It'd be cool to hear it from you about. I know you left South Korea in like 87, and you grew up here, I think, for the majority of the rest of your life. And 1004 Gourmet started initially. Your dad started that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so basically July 5th, 2008, we opened in Al Barsha in this hotel apartment called Coral Al Khoury Hotel Apartment. Back when there was nothing in Barsha, by the way. It was basically Mall of Emirates, all sand, our building. Yeah. Right? And now there's like all these like really delicious joints and like food places and whatever. But back in the day, there's nothing. And the reason we opened there is because the Korean community was growing, but it's still, you know, very, very small relative to other nationalities. But Korean community, because I grew up in Al Ghurair Center, in Daerah. Back in the days.
Oh, geez. Yeah, of course. That was the spot, though.
That was my homeboy Ahmed from Canvas Gelato likes to say, the right side of the creek. And I don't disagree, bro. And so we grew up in El Guerra Center, but then people started to slowly move towards Marina, towards the Greens. Mm-hmm. Once, you know, in 2003, that's when Dubai started to become
what
it is right now. And people start to move there. And so we wanted to create a Korean supermarket that's closer to that demographic, that are for the people that are moving in that side, because there was no Korean supermarket back then there. And to be honest, yeah, we had no retail experience, no food experience. Dealing with shelf life is a bitch, you know.
Like, yeah, I can imagine.
We're still trying to, you know, finesse that, but we had no food or retail experience. My father kind of dove in, but, you know, having been an entrepreneur before, and again, kind of understanding what it takes to succeed and not fail, I think definitely helped in his journey. And at that time, Korean construction companies like Hyundai and Samsung and Daewoo, they actually have like desalination plants and construction plants and gas plants in Abu Dhabi and Ruwais. And we were actually delivering our food all the way there.
Oh, wow.
So we were driving like 3.5-4 hours to Ruwais to deliver our food to the Korean, you know, employees that are working in these construction projects. And that was a very big part of our business. But that's kind of gone down a bit because Koreans haven't gotten a lot of contrast recently. We just naturally grew our retail sector, and we started to realize that, listen, like, even back then, this is 2008, there was still somewhat of a K-pop following in the region.
Yeah,
for sure. A lot more now post like Squid Games and, you know, Parasite BTS and stuff. But even back then, there was a following, and we realized that we, in order for us to sustain this business, we need to branch out to other people that are, you know, interested in not just in Korean food, but also in Japanese food. Mm. We needed to diversify our clientele from Koreans to like Filipinos and Indian people, Pakistani people that may like, you know, Korean culture and Korean dramas as well. And so we started to really, you know, invest our time and money and energy into capturing that side of the market. And again, this is kind of before the whole Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah.
Even back then, it was not as big as it is right now.
Absolutely.
So, you know, with the whole flyers, you know what I mean? Like, fun times, though. Yeah.
That's guerrilla marketing for you, right?
Exactly.
There.
Yeah. Exactly. I love guerrilla marketing. So we started to branch out. And then when I joined, we started to import from Japan. So we went from being a Korean supermarket to having Korean and Japanese products now. And now we've branched out to like Thai, Chinese, and we want to start importing from everybody from kind of Far East, Southeast Asia. And our first restaurant customer was Takashi-san, who opened Tomo in Raffles Hotel.
Oh yeah, of course.
But before that, he had Kisaku.
Okay.
And he's a legend, bro. He's been in the Middle East for like 40 plus years. He opened the first Japanese restaurant in the UAE.
Oh, really?
What was
it called?
I believe it was Yakitori House in one of the first in Royal Ascot Hotel in Bur Dubai on the roof. And even if you look at it, like, I mean, they closed down, but like, they did a good job, you know?
That's a spot.
In the right location, would still do well. Anyways, so Takashi-san, he's like, he was my mentor, like, on developing this kind of restaurant F&B business, Horeca business. But he was my first customer, and we sold kimchi to him. And it's just been like an amazing journey since. So we started to diversify from not just the construction projects, but also retail to other customers, and also selling to restaurants.
Mm.
And and obviously online. So we launched our online website in 2014. Our website right now is really, really bad. I apologize to everybody who shops on our online website, because it requires a lot of patience and dedication. And we are working on it. Hopefully we're going to launch the new site in a couple of months.
Awesome.
It's going to be a lot more streamlined and easier to use, hopefully. But 2014, it was even worse. But we did that. And, you know, moving warehouses, we started from like a 3,000 square feet warehouse to like 15,000 square feet warehouse. And then we expanded when we started to sell to Carrefour and Lulu to a 30,000 square feet warehouse. We ended up spinning off the FMCG division, because we were doing big numbers, but our OPEX was so high that we ended up having to spin it off to a different company so that they take care of the sales part. We still represent the brand.
Yes.
And then, you know. But yeah, so building warehouses, it was a great experience, and talking to people about how to make it efficient, and creating cold storage chillers and freezers that are like thousands of square feet and things like that. That was a good experience. But now our main focus is B2C, man. B2B, as much as I love it, it's so much fun to work with chefs.
Absolutely.
So much fun to like see your ingredients being presented in such a beautiful way, and it itself being appreciated not just by the chefs but by their customers as well. And so that's fun and everything, but for us, I see B2C as our main kind of focus. We're opening in Abu Dhabi and Ream Island and Sky Tower. B2C, it's fun, man. Like, and it's fun because we control our sales channel.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, any new product that I bring in, I consider it as a new business, right? So let's say I bring this water in, or let's say we started bringing in coconut water from Thailand with a friend. And so this is what I'm also trying to do. Like, because now we have the infrastructure in place for us to sell to restaurants, sell to other supermarkets, sell in our own supermarket. So we have not just the logistics, but the sales channel, right?
Yeah.
The market strategy. So I'm working with my friend Laurent to bring in coconut water from Thailand, which we're starting to sell to different restaurants, right? And so this is the fun part. I mean, it took us a long time to get here, but 14 years in, now we're in a position where we can work on these fun projects like the ugly burgers, mm-hmm. like the coconut water, and hopefully I want to start bringing in alcohol with him.
Nice.
And, start bringing in natural wine and selling that in the market because it doesn't exist, and we believe in it, and things like that. So yeah, it's been a long journey, man.
It sounds like a lot of ups,
a lot more downs, to be honest. Like, running a business is not easy, and especially running a family business.
I think that comes with its own unique
when
challenges.
When I say that there are struggles to running a business with your father, whoever is listening to this and whoever is working with their father will understand my struggle, but I just want to say, the father is probably having a tougher time. Like, I feel so bad because, obviously, we get into heated arguments and debates about what direction or what decisions we should make. And it's such a blessing to be working with my father, man. Like, not just having a mentor, but obviously he's my father.
And
being able to run a business with him is so meaningful. And, taking the next step in our businesses and, the small wins that we have together, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But to get there is a journey. And I always feel so bad when like I get into arguments. I'm like, shit, I shouldn't have said all that stuff. He knows.
Yeah, you know? They know. I think they know it always comes from from the right place, but it's just two different mindsets, two different way, the way he grew up and what the world was and what you could do compared to how you grew up and how I grew up. It's just it's literally a different world. So I can understand how there could be a lot of clashes. From the people I know that work in family businesses, I always think, number one, it's a beautiful thing if you can do it. And because at the end of the day, everything you're doing is not like it comes back to not just me, but to my family. So if I'm successful, my family is successful, which at the end of the day, that's the end goal for everyone, to build something that can create wealth for your, not just for yourself, but for your family long term, right?
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that story, man. I really love it. I like hearing, how something starts out of, like, it was just an idea. There was a small, your father saw a gap in the market. He's like, all right, let's do this. And like you correctly said at the time, this is before social media was like actually like a thing that you could use for business.
It was before Instagram was Instagram. Back then it was only Facebook or something.
Yeah, exactly.
That was prevalent.
So to build, because now where we are today, you could be anywhere in the world. Using these platforms, you can target someone at the other side of the world to buy your product. So it's a different ballgame completely. But I like how, the story of starting with the warehouse and then building it up, and as the customer base grew, then you do that. It's interesting. So I've never thought about, when I was thinking today, I'm like, I need to ask him this because I don't know how it works. How do you run like a supermarket like yours? Because I was thinking like it. When sometimes I walk in the supermarket and in my head I'm thinking, how the fuck do these guys have all of these products and almost always it's there. Do you know what I mean? Man. Like from a supply chain thing, that must be nuts.
I think we got lucky when you came because we run out of products a lot. Because the tough part about, okay, let's be more specific towards like running an Asian supermarket.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's say you have a Carrefour or Spinneys, right? Yeah. Obviously, they bring in their own stuff, but the majority, Carrefour and Spinneys, it's a rental market, right? They're renting shelf space, right? All they're doing is, they're doing a lot, obviously. It's a very successful model, yeah. But all they're doing is getting a huge space. And because they're the anchor tenant, they get very, very favorable rental rates, right?
Okay.
They deck it out with shelves, chillers, and freezers. And it's convenient for them because everybody wants to supply them. So whatever they want to supply, every single product, every single SKU, meaning like if you have a water, you have a 250 milliliter water, you have a 500 milliliter, every single SKU, they need to pay a listing fee.
Yeah, right? to put it on the shelf, right?
And then to stay there and to sell the products, they want you to do promotion. So the more promotion you do, you get on their good side.
Ah.
And this is kind of how they make their money. They make their money through their revenue stream. But a lot of the money is being made from the back, from the suppliers who are giving them a lot of these, basically like, they're giving them the cash flow to run their business and everything. Yeah. For us, it's tough because there are not many Asian suppliers in the market, right?
At all,
so
by the
no,
way.
Yeah, I mean there's a couple, and it's interesting for me because a lot of the Asian food suppliers in the market that are doing wholesale and selling to restaurants and selling to supermarkets, they don't have their own retail shop.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so we can buy from these guys, but it's very limited because number one, usually the Asian suppliers are selling to restaurants, right?
Yeah.
And restaurants, what restaurants buy is different to what our customers in the supermarket buy, right?
For sure.
Because the size, it's bulk, right?
Absolutely.
And so that's not suitable for our supermarket. And so for us, we have to import the majority of our products.
Yeah.
That takes a huge toll on my cash flow.
Absolutely.
And it's a huge risk, right? So let's go back, going back to Carrefour and Spinneys. They are not taking the risk of bringing something in, right? Because when you bring in something in, those couple of words, it means you're understanding which product to bring in. You're investing in the stock. There is a lead time of, because I'm bringing my stuff from Korea, right?
Yeah.
Korea and Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're bringing it in from Europe, it takes a month and a half or something, right? From, let's say I order from today, it's going to take a month and a half. From Korea, it takes two months. But
wow.
Now with COVID and a lot of these like container logistics issues, we're looking at three and a half months sometimes.
Oh, shit.
And so that's back to what you're saying. How do we run a supermarket business? Bro, like it's again, people and systems,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But us not running out of stuff, I got to admit, man, we do. And
sure.
There's always a gap, especially when there's delays in shipments and things like that. Yeah, we go through a trouble of stock, but yeah, it's not easy, man. Like working with products that have a shelf life is such a headache.
I can imagine.
And again, like it's important not to underorder because then you're losing sales, but you don't want to overorder because then you're overinvesting in the stock and again, cash flow, right? That's what our business is all about because we don't have the luxury of being like Uber and losing $1 billion a month and still operating completely fine. That is the future though.
Yeah.
Sure. But yeah, man, like just systems in place, hiring the right people. We're a logistics and a people business, I like to delegate work and again, yes, hiring good people, putting in good systems in place, and ERP systems as well. Like I spent like 2 years building our ERP system.
Wow.
Which it's still not perfect, but it's better than what we were using.
That's for
and
sure.
So,
yeah.
So yeah, it's not easy, but it's fun. It keeps me on my toes. Keeps my brain running.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
First of all, because I wanted you already answered what I was going to ask you, but I didn't know how long it would take to source these kind of products. Because everything that you guys, like you said, you bring in is imported because you're not going to find that here. And I think one of the challenges maybe that you might face is you guys are, you know, you guys are the place. Everyone knows about you. There are other Asian supermarkets, but in terms of not just quality, but what I loved about it, it was like, this is like a, in quotation marks, a Dubai style Asian market. You know, it's like super well done. It's clean. Thank like you. It's a place that when I walk in, I'm like, no, I like this. You know?
Thank you, bro.
I'm not just saying that. I genuinely do. When I go there, I'm in there for like half an hour, because then I go look at the knives, and then I go look at like some other shit over here. I'm just like looking. I'm like, there's a lot of cool shit here. So I didn't know that the lead times were so long. I knew it was challenging, but I didn't know with such a long lead time, I can't even imagine like the complexity of like, what if a shipment doesn't come through of this product? You know what I mean? And that's probably why you run out, because you guys are the place. So most people are coming to you, as myself included. And there's such long lead times.
Exactly.
That combination is...
Yeah, just, you know, again, be relying on just yourself to supply your own sales channel as a supermarket is not easy. But then again, like the way I see it is, it's a big barrier to entry for anybody else to do what we do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And but back to like, again, I really appreciate the compliment that you gave on the shop. But to be honest, like there are shops like this all over Korea and Japan, and that's where I took a lot of my inspiration. And
sure.
And like what we have, what we're planning to open in Abu Dhabi is like 1004 2.0.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because it's going to have a bigger kitchen, and we're going to be serving. It's going to have like a really tiny food court slash cafe in there with a sushi bar and everything. But yeah, I mean, my end goal is to create something that already exists in Korea, Japan, and Thailand. When you go to these department stores and there are these like amazing supermarkets with really nice food court. That's my dream.
That's the dream.
That's my dream. That's so, the dream. But yeah, appreciate it. I just needed to throw it out there that there was no originality, to be honest. I just used Pinterest and like my photographs and of like spying around Korean supermarkets and Japanese supermarkets. But appreciate it, bro.
No, not at all, man. And I think it's funny. I spoke to someone recently, and they're a pretty big business here. He was the CEO of Brands for Less. I interviewed him for AUD's podcast that I was telling you about.
Nice.
And what I've realized is when it comes to entrepreneurship, I think there's a misconception behind it that you have, in order to be successful, you have to create something brand new that no one's ever thought of and so on. But in his case, he went to the States, he went to TJ Maxx. He's like, there's none here. There's a gap. Let's do it. Same thing with you. Your father saw a gap in the market, and he's like, okay, why don't we just do that here? So I don't think originality is important.
I don't think so at all. Sometimes I think we put that
kind of perspective on it.
Yeah, I mean, you know the whole Blue Ocean book.
Yeah, of course.
And so for us, like we were definitely not number one. There was Hanarim Supermarket in Karama. They existed back then. I think maybe one other supermarket, but again, the way we differentiated ourselves is by, it's very easy, right? For any business, you provide a better product,
yeah,
or product choice,
yeah.
Provide better prices, provide a better experience.
Yeah,
that's what it is in any business,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And so originality, original for the market, yeah, maybe, right? Mm-hmm. But you're not recreating an iPhone. Like you don't need to do that in this world. Like mm-hmm. you can just duplicate that whatever else is being done in other countries, bring it in. And then that's what Rocket does really well, right? Like the German, what do you call it? Tech VC. They invested in a lot of tech companies.
Oh, okay.
And they were very good at seeing what was being done in the States and replicating that in Europe and other countries as well. But yeah, man.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurship in that sense is somewhat a lot easier. Yeah. But then,
the model's there. I just need to get it right over here.
Yeah.
Right. And hopefully it sticks and it does work.
Exactly.
I wanted to touch on so I know you started off as the Mart, now it's Gourmet. And I love that now there's, what was your process behind thinking about expanding within the store for like Cafe Bloom and you know the Lemmy's products? And by the way, I'm a I make my own drip coffee every morning. So I'm a big fan. And I've had the coffee from there. And I know the roasters that you guys use. So it's very good. Thank you. But yeah, I'm just curious, what was your thought process behind
that? So when we were first planning to open our shop, right now it's in the Onyx, it's 8,300 square feet.
Okay.
Initially, it was meant to be 4,500.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So we actually took up a different space in that building, still in the middle of nowhere, kind of, you know, like it's in the second floor. It's hard to find. But we ended up, so my wife runs Lamis Beauty. It's the Korean beauty shop.
Okay.
She's now supplying Watson's with all of their Korean beauty products and stuff. Doing excellent. She's my retirement plan. So she was running that, and like we thought about, okay, let's obviously give you a spot and make a really nice shop. And Lamis is like the nicest out of the whole shop, in my opinion. And then specialty coffee is a passion of mine. I lived in the Greens for 7 years, and I had to, like, whenever I would drive like north, I would always drop by Raw Coffee or Stomping Grounds or Brew.
Yeah, that's what started. That was those are the, like the OGs kind of.
I love Brew Cafe. Yeah, like that's how I fell in love with the barn, and then got to know Ralph, and he's an amazing guy. So, specialty coffee is a passion of mine. I thought that the Greens needed a specialty coffee shop. Considering kind of the people that live there, and the area doesn't have a specialty coffee shop, bro.
No, it doesn't.
And so I had this really strong kind of, what do you call it? When you're
motivation, desire,
like selfishness,
yeah,
of wanting to convert, like to create the best specialty coffee shop, at least in the Greens, right?
Yeah.
Never picked up. And my guys were saying, "Oh, sir, like we should sell more Korean dishes." I'm like, "No, we're a specialty coffee shop. We should sell sandwiches."
Mm-mm.
And then I went to Hong Kong, and then I see like bubble tea shops selling like beef noodle soup. I was like, "Screw this!
Yeah.
I'm gonna sell bibimbap."
Yeah.
And then it started to pick up. So now we're not a specialty coffee shop. We're a bibimbap shop. And then my wife from the beginning was like, "You guys should sell bubble tea."
Yeah.
But thing is, like again. This is something that I learned. Don't ever listen to yourself if the market doesn't react, right?
Yeah.
And so I started doing specialty coffee. It didn't sell. And my wife's always told me, like, you should sell bubble tea. I was like, we're a specialty coffee shop. I don't want to sell bubble tea. Yeah. Plus, I'm not a big fan of bubble tea, to be honest.
Okay, fair enough.
But then my guy, you know, like the guys in the cafe are like, sir, like we're getting a lot of demand for bubble tea. They want us to do it. I was like, cool. Why don't you make it? But I don't want to use the powder shit. Because lot of the bubble tea places, they use that it's like the baby milk kind of formula thing, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, I will never do that. Make it from scratch.
Yeah.
So now the reason we don't have a big bubble tea menu is because everything's made from scratch.
Yeah.
But now we're selling more bubble tea than coffee. And Cafe Bloom went from like wanting to be a specialty coffee shop to now a bibimbap and a bubble tea shop. But yeah, man, like that was my first kind of, you know, step into the F&B world. It's one of those things where like, because it never picked up, you kind of have to come up with creative ways to generate traffic, to generate revenue.
Yeah.
And now I want to open up like 10 of these, bro. Running a cafe is crazy. Like once you have the right market, cafe margins are good, bro. And it doesn't require such a big team, and you don't need a big space. And so right now, like, I want to create a spin-off brand of that.
Okay.
To create like a bubble tea kind of Korean cafe kind of concept.
Do you think bubble tea delivery would work?
It does work. Yeah.
It does?
It already exists, and there are people killing it right now.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Bubble teas, I don't know what happened, but they went through a boom in like 2010, 11, 12. And then suddenly just crashed. I don't know what happened. Everybody closed. And
like
then
the
now
last 5 years,
it's like,
it's everywhere.
Oh my God. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So bubble tea for sure. It's killing it. Coffee as well. Like we were bringing in, so I would travel to Korea, Japan, Thailand a lot. And so whenever I traveled, I used to take two suitcases and I would bring at least 20 kilos of beans.
Wow.
Because I'm paying for the flight anyways, right?
Yeah. Might as well.
And to bring in, so, cause we have to air freight the beans.
Yeah.
So I'm saving an air freight, I'm bringing in cool fucking beans, right? Like I brought beans from like Onibus in Japan, from it's been a while. From Hong Kong, there was the I forgot the name. Cupping Room.
Cupping Room is known. Yeah, it's them.
It's one of the top ones. I used to do that because we wanted to differentiate ourselves from other coffee shops, and mm-hmm. not many people appreciate it as much as I thought. But no, we stick by that, bro. Yeah. Like, and now we're bringing in Fritz Coffee from Korea. We're one of the top specialty coffee roasters. That's like an institution. We try to have at least like 6 to 8 varieties, which nobody else is really doing. And because coffee margins are so big for me, like, I'm like, you know what, let's bring in like small 250 gram packages mm-hmm. and try to like have as much variety as possible to offer, because the barn or any of these specialty coffee shops, they change their origins every month.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. That's the fun part about this business.
Yeah.
And we're doing cooking classes in the cafe as well.
I saw, and you guys also, I remember I read that during the pandemic, you guys had to kind of pivot to online classes
deliver it to them. Yeah, too, right? Yeah. That was really fun because it was tough, right? Like pandemic obviously was tough on everybody.
Hit everyone, yeah, for sure.
Like, I mean, fortunately, because we were a supermarket, we were able to stay open. But at that time, we were picking up momentum on cooking classes in the cafe. And then obviously the pandemic happened. And so our team, Alicia, who used to work with us, but she's moved on to a different company, but she was spearheading these cooking classes. And we worked with Kate and Jesse from Lowe. Okay. They just won the Michelin Green Star. They also won the Sustainability Award at 50 Best as well.
That's awesome.
Lowe is in Canvas, Coa by Canvas in Albarari area. Amazing restaurant, one of my favorite places. And they were doing dumpling classes.
Oh,
and so
that's
what
sick.
We would do is we would send the pre-cut ingredients in an ice box to the guests, and then we would have a Zoom session with the chef, and it was just such an amazing experience.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We did like 20 classes in like, I don't know, 5 months or something like that.
Wow.
It was really fun. And yeah, I mean, again, this is the fun part. Like, I don't know if we will talk about it later on, but like the community is so small in Dubai when it comes to food, and being able to kind of work with the chefs and coming up with creative ways to sell and creative ways to differentiate themselves and ourselves from the competition and things like that, you know, and collaborating and things like that. That's the beauty about this business, to be honest.
Yeah. I think from listening, you know, to your story and listening to all the evolutions and changes that have happened within the store and like how you were thinking of things and so on, I think what's really cool what I've taken from it is you kind of have a foundation that's there, that's the main business, but because of that, it enables you to, you know, create so many different potential revenue streams, which is really nice, because I think some other types of businesses or industries, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Which I think is really, really cool. You know, listening to how you switch from coffee to, you know, bubble tea, which I've had too. And it's definitely not like any other bubble tea I've had here, because I've had all the other ones. I'm a big fan. And coffee is an interesting one. I love coffee. Same. I think I've hit, I don't know. There's very few places in Dubai I probably haven't had their coffee. Now I only buy from one because I think my bar has now been ridiculously too high. So if I'm not going to make it, if you can't make it the way I like it, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I might not come back. Not necessarily about the coffee itself. Cause
of course.
In Dubai, because I have one of my really good friends. He lives in Canada and he works as a barista. And he's like, Khaled, when he comes here, he's like, you don't understand how spoiled you are here for like coffee, in terms of like there you don't find a geisha in every shop, you know. You know, he's like, you want like 1-2 stores might have it, the top guys, bro. Here you can go to any store, how many geishas do you want, you know? It's really funny. But yeah, I think coffee is an interesting one here. The market for it is huge. It's beyond saturated. So is food, but again, you know, sometimes I think I'm like, if a food concept is going to open up, someone's going to open this up, whatever. And I'm like, is it? There's so much it's interesting because me and my friends were just talking about this. Like, there's so, because we were talking about burgers. Burger is my favorite edible product in the world.
Oh, okay, cool.
I love them. Love them. Yeah, yeah, please. I never actually only heard found out about it recently. I hadn't before.
No worries. We're going to upgrade it, so you're going to love it. We're doing a lot of, we should just invite you for the tasting.
Bro, I'm so down. I would love, that would be like a dream. I like, have to taste burgers. That's fantastic. But I think it's interesting that there's so much, it's such a saturated market, yet I think what you hear about from word of mouth, you start seeing which ones like rise up that, yeah, you know, that people are talking about.
The ones
about.
That float.
Yeah, the ones that float. Because a friend of mine was like, man, every time I want a burger and I go on Deliveroo, I have like 20 options. But he's like, every time, like more times than not, that I go to an option that I haven't tried before or no one has told me about, it's not the best, you know, yeah, it's not great. But so if
why
you,
did I spend this money on this?
He's like I'll just stick to the classics or the ones exactly that I know that I like. So my question is, like, for example, I know you have Ugly Burger and so on, and what do you think it is when there's so much but only a few rise to the top? Why do those rise to the top? Because if it comes to taste, it's not gonna, like, There can be a huge difference, or there can be slight differences, but there's a reason I keep going back to your burger place instead of another one.
Dude, that's the billion-dollar question, right?
Yeah.
Why McDonald's over Burger King?
Yeah. Oh. I don't know. For me, it's the fries. The fries are
That's a very solid question. And to be honest, I think branding has, look, flavor is the foundation.
Yes,
obviously, absolutely. It needs to taste good. You can't sell a product that tastes like shit and expect it to succeed. Understanding your market, flavor, and marketing, in my opinion, is, okay. I mean, in between a good customer experience, nice interior, all that stuff, great. But main thing is flavor and marketing.
Mm.
And I think that's what, you know, I'm really good friends with High Joint, Dr. Hamed. We actually did our Ugly Noodles pop-up.
Yeah, I
in
saw
High
that.
Joint Burger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's how close we are. And Pickle as well. Simon Ritchie, who works at Pickle, is a good friend as well. But I think that's what they've done really well, man. And I think, okay, they are competition. I mean, they don't consider me competition because I'm so small. But they are competition. But also, it's great to have these guys because they provide you with a benchmark, right? We can see what they're doing. We can see how they're succeeding and kind of get a gauge on what they're doing and understand, okay, maybe this is the kind of direction that we need to go in. Not exactly the same direction, but, you know, we see the light.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Again, Pickle, man, like they've, their marketing is, I wish that I had their budget, bro. But, and also I say this to other people as well, but like, even if you have a budget, it's the people that run the campaigns that make it fun and creative, mm-hmm. like the Adidas Ravi, for example.
Right? Yeah,
everybody in the world has
that blew
has
up.
Amazing budgets, but it's the execution of that idea.
Yeah,
that is so important. And so, yeah, man, like Pickle and High Joint, they got a good team behind them, and we just got to step up our game and make sure that we get into the same conversation as them.
Yeah,
you know. But yeah, that's a very good question.
Yeah, but it's funny you mentioned those two in particular. So, obviously, and this is no disrespect to either of them, just my personal thing. I think sometimes, like High Joint, I remember when High Joint opened, because it's like right here, it's literally right there. And like, I'm like, yo, this is ridiculous. It's hands down, I think, best burger I've had in Dubai so far. Pickle, personally, it's all good, but I'm just being picky to myself.
You should be.
You know?
There's nothing wrong being picky.
And I think that, like, I think Pickle personally is very good, but it's overrated. That's my opinion. High Joint used to be, in my mind, the best. And I've just felt over the last, I don't know, year or so, my own experience, my own thing, I'm like, it's not what it was.
I just want to say, this is not my opinion.
Dr.
Hamed, Simon, I still love you.
We make it clear. I want to make this clear. This is just my personal opinion. This has nothing to do with Chang whatsoever.
The guest does not share this. Trying to be politically correct here.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. As good.
I respect that. And like, dude, like people like, okay, when it's somebody that understands the market or when it's feedback like that, 100%.
Yeah.
When it's feedback like, oh, I went to this restaurant and like they treated me like shit, or they didn't treat me like a king or a queen, or like there are some guys out there that like they criticize out of malice. It's not criticize for it's not constructive criticism.
Yeah.
It's out of bad intention,
yeah.
which I hate.
Yeah,
and it's just the entitlement for a lot of these customers and the way they write, it feels like they own the place.
Mm.
You know, it feels like for them to think that their opinion matters that much, in my opinion, is so funny. Like when I read somebody's feedback, you know, but things like this, that's constructive feedback.
Yeah. Like it's just, again, it's my personal preference. Yeah. It's my own thing.
Exactly.
It's interesting that it seems that there's a huge, like I've noticed, I'm a big foodie. So like if there's a new restaurant and you tell me, let's go, I'm like, yes, anytime. I've noticed there's a huge demand and huge supply now of Asian restaurants.
Oh, yeah.
Chinese, Japanese, Korean. Mainly
Japanese.
Korean, not so much.
Wish I had money to open a Korean concept.
Which is interesting. But my question to you is so you've been in like the food industry here for like
14 years,
right? From when you started, I guess, to now, how have you seen like the evolution and that demand increase?
It's crazy.
And what do you think the reason for that is? That's something that I'm...
Money.
Do you think it's just money?
Oh, 100%, bro.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, look, but the best food in the world is in probably New York, right? Or Tokyo or Hong Kong. I think when it comes to Japan and China, they have the history of food. But when it comes to New York or London, like British food is very bad.
Yeah, not fun.
I like fish and chips, but you know.
Yeah, but who's not going to like fish and
exactly.
chips? Deep fried fish, like,
exactly.
Whatever. Yeah.
But London has one of the best foods in the world because they have so much money, right? And so when you have money, investors find chefs who they want to open up restaurants with, or chefs find investors who they can open up restaurants with. There's more options, and there's more, just more options, more concepts opening, and with the influx of all of this, you know, millionaires coming into Dubai. Mm. Wanting to replicate what they had in their own home country I think Dubai has become from a residence or from a foreign direct investment perspective a lot more affluent, and thanks to that we've seen amazing concepts and also the maturation mm-hmm. of the industry as well.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think one of the biggest kind of hindrances for really cool concepts opening up in Dubai, in my opinion, is the lack of small spaces for restaurants to open in. So when you open a restaurant, it's usually minimum 3,500 square feet, which in general is a very big space. When you go to Korea, Japan, or even New York, you don't see
it's
that like, many restaurants
super tiny.
That are nice that are that big, right? Usually it's like small concept that's like 1,000 to 2,000 mm-hmm. square feet. And now I think hotels and restaurants or like developers are starting to understand that.
Yeah.
And they are providing options for smaller spaces. Also rents. You know, if you look at the culinary area of Dubai, right? And I think JLT is one of the best. Because why? There are a lot of good concepts because of good rents, right?
Yeah.
JLT, I think 10 years ago, was one of the cheapest places to open anything.
Yeah, probably.
Even though traffic is bad, parking is horrible.
Horrendous.
You forget to park and you get a 200 dirham fine.
Yeah. I hope that food was worth it.
Yes, exactly. So I think rent has been going down in retail specifically.
Okay.
There's a lot of retail space that needs to be rented out. There's a lot of retailers that are struggling, in my opinion. And as a result, because of cheaper rent, there are more opportunities for chefs. And even like, for example, Nakheel Mall is Nakheel's kind of flagship mall because it's on the palm, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They have Sushi Samba there. They have Aura pool bar there. They have Tristan Studio there. There's going to be sick restaurants opening there. Why? The developers are taking it into their own hands to bring in cool concepts. Back in the days, developers were sitting back and waiting for these guys to come.
Okay.
Right.
So now it's part of the like.
Now it's a buyer's market. Back in the days, it used to be a supplier's market where there wasn't enough space, so rents are going 100 dirhams per square feet. But now, because there's so much space, these developers are going out and looking for concepts to come into their space with very favorable rent conditions.
Yeah.
You know, so
I think that's always, I think, like, I know about the, like, I've heard from people I like who work in food or whatever, and like Tariq, for example, he's told me, because he knows, and like the numbers I hear just for rent in my mind, I'm like, and like when you see all these big restaurants open in places like like DIFC, you know, like the Shanghaimese, the Amazonicos, like these massive, like, I'm like, I don't even know how much money you probably invested to get to this, but in my mind I'm like, what's the payback period? 5, 10 years maybe?
So it's not even the rent, it's the construction cost as well, right?
Okay.
So when you look at, I don't think I should, I can say these numbers actually. Anyways, no, it's a lot of numbers.
Sure.
It's a lot of zeros.
Sure, yeah.
For a restaurant.
Okay.
But to be honest, bro, they're killing it. Some of these restaurants in Dubai right now are doing figures you will not fathom. Because, again, there's so much money in Dubai right now. So many people that are willing to spend 1,000, 2,000 dirhams per person. And that's not a bad thing, man. It helps the market, right?
Yeah.
And so, I'm a big fan of that. And as a supplier of the restaurants, I guess, I'm a big fan of that as well. But also what I wanted to say was, with all these new restaurants opening up,
yeah,
and the maturation of the industry, and most importantly, the maturation of the palate of the customers, of the people that are eating in Dubai, it's changing.
Yeah.
You know, so when I started off, like, I couldn't sell that many boxes of uni. Uni is sea urchin, right?
I love
it. I sell it for a couple hundred dollars per packet. It's 250.
Yeah.
It's a very expensive product,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
like
yeah,
for Toro, sure. For example. Like super, bluefin tuna.
Super expensive.
I was one of the few people that are importing it. Now everybody's importing it.
Mm.
You know, that's how saturated already the market is, because everybody has bluefin tuna. People are starting to like not use the elephant tuna. Right. Yet, so in tuna, there are different grades of quality.
Yeah.
Bluefin tuna is the best quality. Yep. Then there's big eye, and then there's like yellowfin and albacore and all that stuff. Yellowfin tuna is what's most prevalently used in kind of the cheaper sushi places.
Sure.
And it's fine, just because it's cheaper. It's just bluefin is just so good.
Yeah.
But there are even like average restaurants using bluefin tuna.
Yeah.
That was unfathomable back in the days, but now because people's palates are developed, they can taste the difference between the tuna.
Yeah.
They love uni. And now I'm working with like chefs to bring in seasonal products, right? Like melons, like $100 melons, like seasonal fish, right? Which I'm bringing in eel that's been freshly prepared from Japan and it comes here, and then one of the restaurants is using it. Sushi Samba's using it right now.
Yeah, it's great.
That is very, very hard to come by, not just in Dubai, but anywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
You ask anybody who's using unagi like this, not many. So again, developed culinary scene, love it. You know, good to see a lot of these people asking for new products and stuff like that. So
It's interesting. One of the, what you said about, I never thought of it from a financial perspective as one of the key reasons as to why the scene here has exploded over the last 10 years, particularly with like Asian cuisine, but like all cuisines, to be fair. And I think you're right on the money when you say that because there's so much choice and so much variety. Like I tell people, like I've been fortunate enough to travel to many places. I'm like, in Dubai, your average level of food quality is very high.
Very high.
Very high, which you don't find in a lot of other places around the world. You need to go to like certain spots, find the good ones, and
we're spoiled, bro.
Yeah, we are. And I think that, honestly, we're spoiled in many ways. In food and in like hospitality.
Emirates Airlines, traffic.
Yeah, everything.
Like people don't travel from downtown to Marina. Bro, it's 20 minutes.
Yeah.
In Korea, you have to take the metro for an hour to go to the other side. And you're complaining about 20 minutes traffic?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're definitely spoiled. But you're talking about the money side of the business.
Yeah.
I lost my train of thought.
It's all good. We'll get it back.
Yeah.
I was talking about how the financial aspect was so key for this growth over the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah. No, yeah. So it's definitely the money, and again the number of people that are coming in, because it's such a transient city, right?
Like, yeah.
And a lot of people are coming in from like Hong Kong and these food places that are very, very developed. And
yeah,
we'll, hopefully we'll just keep this momentum going, man.
I don't see it slowing down, yeah. You know, at any point. If anything, it's just going to get bigger and better.
Yeah.
You mentioned that in an interview that you did that there was over the last like couple of years, there's been a big influence of Korean culture, and not just you know, from K-pop to the shows to food and so on. So I'm curious, what do you think the reason like Korean culture has become like at the forefront, like has really like, it's like before, if you were into it, like if you're into that like Korean culture and Japanese culture and like Asian culture, fine, you'd understand it, you'd get it. But now I think it's like now in the
it's commercial.
Yes, there you go. It's commercial. Why do you think there's been such an explosion for that?
I don't think it was one thing that happened. It's many things that has happened in the last, I think, 2.5 decades.
Yeah.
So probably like early 2000s, end of 90s. Even back then, like there were Korean drama shows being shown in Turkey and Iran and things like that. I am by no means an expert in Korean drama, just because I don't watch a lot of them, to be honest.
Sure.
But in Korean script writing, I think is very, very strong. Koreans are very good at writing scripts. That's number one. And my theory, which holds no credibility, is we have no budget. We don't have Hollywood budget, so we got to at least make the story good. You know, like, have you seen Old Boy, for example?
No.
Oh, you got to see Old Boy, bro. Have you seen Parasite?
Obviously, yeah. Parasite was excellent.
Yeah, so like Koreans are very good at writing scripts, and that's number one. But number two, I think, especially in the Middle East, man, like our culture and Middle Eastern culture is very similar. You know, we are conservative, we are family oriented, and I think that is the backbone of most Korean dramas.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it is a bit more halal than the American, you know, shit shows.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So I think that actually played a big role in our kind of drama presence in the region.
Yeah.
That number one. Number two, this continuation of all those shows and the interest that has gradually increased in the region, but also K-pop.
I
think what Koreans are very good at is looking at numbers and looking at the reactions of the public and understanding what they're looking for.
Yeah.
And that's what K-pop does really, really, really well. Mm. Understanding the sounds that the song needs to have, understanding how the crowd will react, creating trendy videos and things like that. And the execution, bro, these guys are like, look, it may seem funny, it may seem gimmicky, but I respect these guys, because these guys hustle from like the morning until midnight. They barely get any sleep. They don't have a great life. Mm. 99% of these guys are like hustling, bro.
Yeah.
And I have so much respect for these. They're kids.
Yeah.
They're hustling.
Yeah.
But like the hustle and the grind and the execution is you're the best in the world. The best dancers, the best singers. So naturally, when you look at the globalization of this world and the internet, where there's free news everywhere, naturally, when you're the best dancers and the best singers, you will capture an audience that, you know, that is going to be big. And they just had a huge 2 or 3 day event in Riyadh with K-pop bands. And there's a Korean art showing going on. There's going to be a lot of K-pop shows. And we're riding the wave right now.
Yeah. No, for sure. I've noticed that too. Again, I've like growing up, I've always been more into Japanese culture because of anime, of course.
Naruto and stuff. Dragon Ball.
I was never a big Dragon Ball
fan. I think you're younger than me, that's why.
Maybe. But I know like for like people like love Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
But yeah, huge anime fan. But after the show that like got me, like converted me, was Squid Game.
Oh, okay.
After I watched Squid Game, I'm like I just thought it was the concept of the show was so I've never seen anything like it. It's
pretty crazy.
Really great.
Well, it is like Battle Royale. You know Battle Royale, the Japanese movie?
No, actually.
Takeshi Kitano, bro.
No.
Oh my God, you got to watch it. You got to watch.
Just make a note of this.
Battle Royale. Oh my God, it's such a good movie. They have students in an island that kill each other.
Ooh.
Yeah, bro.
Oh, that sounds like my... That's yeah, right yeah, up my alley.
It's sick.
But after that, after Squid Game, I'm like, okay, that's a one-off. You know, it's a show that everyone loved. I just dove head deep into... I didn't know what I liked, what I do. But now, like, I got to a point now, I'm like, oh, if this actor... I like this actor. Is he in the show? That means, okay, I get what the show's going to be about. I get the vibe. And I love it. I think what you said in terms of the scripts are excellent, and yeah, the quality, like visually, is unbelievable. Like really, like you really, really, really appreciate it. At least I do. You know.
What's funny is because Squid Game is a Netflix.
Yeah.
So it's technically not a Korean drama. It's an American drama.
Yeah, which is surprising.
But that's why they had such a big budget to do all that cool shit.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And it's crazy for 10 years, like they wrote it, and now all of a sudden, like it's there. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how these things just, you know, explode. One thing that I think about a lot is the relationship between culture and food. I think food, like music and food, probably are the two biggest ones. But if you look, food is such a nice entry into another culture.
Food is culture.
You know, so what are your thoughts and your perspective on that, like kind of relationship?
100%, man. And I think so like the whole kind of appropriation of food, you know, that's been going on in Palestine and you know Israel trying to take hummus and stuff like that, like it's happened to Korea. But I think like food is culture, and it's so important for any country to make sure that their history is preserved, right? And it's such an important aspect of our business because we do consider ourselves to a certain extent cultural ambassadors, right?
Absolutely. And so absolutely.
And I speak about, even though I'm Korean, I speak about Japanese food and Chinese food and Thai food with as much pride, if not more, because I'm not from that country, with so much pride to my customers and guests. And not only that, like when you look at foods that are available outside of that country, it's usually, you know, the most popular products. But for me, what excites me is the unique products that the country has to offer. Like, for example, I'm bringing in ginseng from Korea.
Ooh, sick.
You know, nice. Like ginseng is meant to be very, very healthy. It's good, meant to be good for men if you want to have kids. And we're bringing in like black garlic from Thailand, for
ooh,
example.
Nice.
And this black garlic, it's a single clove garlic. So when you look at a garlic, there's many cloves.
Yeah.
This one is a single clove black garlic. Like cool shit like that, you know? And so that's what really, really excites me.
Yeah.
It's not like when it's meat, for example, like it's not the ribeye, it's the offcuts.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's that's more interesting. It has more of a story, you know? And so, yeah, food is definitely, food is culture.
Yeah.
Food is one of the biggest parts of any country's culture. And it's very important for us to communicate, like, yeah, explain the product, explain the dishes, explain
absolutely
the ingredients, you know, and have cooking classes to show them. Right, because we're transferring that knowledge of our history and culture to the other people, whether it's Japanese, Korean, or Thai.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, it's food is culture.
I couldn't agree with you more. I'm like,
it's a good name for a podcast.
Yeah, coming soon. Stay tuned. Stay tuned. I totally agree with you, man. Like I know, like I've learned about so many different cultures and parts of the world just from eating their food. And I'm like, I love this. I love that. You know, it's just like, if I'm going to go by cuisine, my favorite is probably Chinese.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. If you tell me Chinese food, I'm like anytime, but also I'm very picky with certain things, like with steak, with sushi, and with like the quality of certain types of food that I love, because I'm like, if I'm not going to get that level, I don't want it. You know, I'd rather not eat it. Which brings me on to my next question. You said that in an interview once that there's been a rise of a lot more approachable fine dining, like fine cuisine. You know, you're not
fine casual.
Yeah. Exactly. I think that's how you phrased it. And I've noticed that too with places like when I think of that, the places I think about are like Orfali Bros about like Three Fills,
Kinoya,
Goldfish.
Low.
And I'm curious, why do you think there's such an increase for that these days? Why?
I think it's just the trend in the global market when you look at the top.
Oh, really? It's not just.
Not in Dubai. Oh, okay. I think it's been a long time coming for Dubai because there was such a big gap between fine dining and cheap food, right? Like, you know, you have your Ravis and then you have your Zumas. Mm. Like, there was a very, very big gap between the two, but now there are a lot of restaurants that are filling that gap. And to be honest, man, like it all does also come down to money, right? Like there is a segment of the market that can afford to spend 500 to 2,000 dirhams per meal, but then not everybody has that. So catering to that middle market, I think, is very, very important. And also, like, I think it's more approachable. It's more, what do you call it? The setting when you go into such a restaurant, it's not intimidating.
Yeah.
And I think I appreciate spaces that are intimidating because some occasions call for it.
Yes, absolutely.
And so I respect that. But then you don't want to go there every week.
Yeah.
Or like, I don't know, you don't want to go there often. Yeah. You prefer to go to a place that's more relaxed, that's more friendly. You know, I can kind of lay back on my chair. I don't have to like sit up straight and... You know what I mean? So, yeah, I think from that extent, it's been a global trend.
Yeah.
And it's so nice to see more and more places. Boca, for example.
Boca's great.
Dude,
yeah.
Like one of the best, like, you know, quality and value meals like in Dubai, in my opinion. And their wine selection is amazing. Shout out to Omar.
Shout out.
But yeah, man. And hopefully we'll see more.
The way things are going, I think we definitely will. And I like that. I'm kind of like you. Like, I don't always want to go to like a super fancy place. Like, I want to go in a t-shirt and shorts and like have food that's from a quality perspective is on that level,
exactly.
Just at a different price point, you know? So
exactly.
It's like, it's kind of like a win-win for me. And also I think what I really like about this segment of the market, this like middle segment, is the creativity and variety that you get out of it. Because with a fine dining place, unless you're like some type of test kitchen that, you know, it's a set menu and you pay and it's like a omakase, whatever kind of experience, you're known for one thing. I'm an Italian restaurant. This is what I can do.
Yeah.
I'm a Japanese, Chinese, whatever. It's, if I'm going there for that reason, no problem. But with these kind of places, you know, I think it's just, for example, I love this place. Because I'm like, how? Just like Orfali, man, that like...
I love Orfali.
Yeah, just...
he's a good guy too.
Great guy. I really like...
Congrats to Orfali. He just placed in the, what do you call it, 50
yeah.
best?
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Mabruk, Entresen Studio.
And
shout out to him, Anshu.
I've heard of them, but I haven't checked
them
out.
Oh, you got to check it out.
Yeah. I've heard a lot about it, but I haven't
checked him out after you watch Battle Royale.
No, for sure. I think... I'm being exposed to so many different types of things I wouldn't find maybe necessarily at that kind of restaurant, which is
exactly.
really cool.
Exactly.
Which is really cool from as a
and
consumer.
Even Moonrise as well.
Moonrise is, that's my boy over there.
Yeah. They're killing it. Suleiman and his team, Misbah, and obviously the whole team.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Moonrise, I will say, if you want that kind of experience, really, like, it was something special.
Yeah.
I had like tastes and flavors and in my mouth that I'm like, what the hell's going on?
Exactly.
But I love that again.
Yeah. He's very, very talented.
So yeah. He just won an award. So congrats to him if you're listening.
Shout out.
Chang, I just have two more questions for you.
Sure.
These are questions that I ask all my guests. So first, looking back at, you know, either like your life, your career, if I asked you, what are you most proud of for yourself? What would you say?
Oof. Not relative to family, right? Because I would say my twins are what
I can be
family. Most proud of.
Family is a very common one.
But no, like in terms of business, to be able to, because we do invest a lot of time and energy and money into branding ourselves as a spot that is meaningful to people's lives, right?
Yeah.
Like whether it's our cooking classes, whether it's the videos that we make that show people how to make cool food in their own kitchen, whether it's, you know, bringing in stuff that somebody might miss in Korea or Japan, you know, bringing that in and then being like, oh wow, I can't believe this is here, you know, and like to be, and like I see so many kids in the shop, like, and they're so happy to come to my supermarket, and that just, you know, hits me in my heart. It's very, and it is emotional, and you know, we do it as much time and money we invest into this. We, you know, we appreciate the support from the community as well. And to be honest, the community is what I'm most proud of, like having friends in such good places and people to talk to, and, you know, and again, like building a business with my family, with my father, that I think those things are what I'm most proud of.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. Achieved.
Yeah.
I totally get that. And I think, you know, besides like your kids, but also to build something that has become so, like the go-to spot for like Asian cuisine, you know, is in a market that you're on the other side of the world with all these products. But, you know, it has given, I respect that because it gave someone like me, for example, the opportunity to experience that food without going there, even though I have been to Seoul, which is, it's insane. Nice. It's so sick. Like to go and to be able to like go to this, go online, get inspired by like a Korean show, go be able to buy it, make it at home and like to taste it.
Amazing.
That just drives me more to like, to come back and dive deeper into like, what else can I make? What else can I try? So I really appreciate that as a customer, but respect to you and, you know, your father for building what you've built.
Thank you, bro.
And for my last question, man, what is the message you'd like everyone to take home with them today?
Oh, wow. What is the message? I have a good message. Don't take everything so seriously. Nothing's a big deal. As long as you're healthy, as long as you have a house, nothing is worth that emotional baggage you're going to put on yourself. And that's the way I try to live, man. Like, as long as I'm happy, my parents are happy, my kids are happy, healthy, and we have a roof and we can eat. All the other work stuff, all those like things, like crazy scenarios that you create in your head, like I try not to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I try like my best to control my stress and like just, yeah. That's the advice that I give to most like people younger than me. Like,
yeah.
When you think that you're going through a tough time, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal at all.
Yeah. It's just in that, I think that's a beautiful message, and I relate to that a lot. I think, not just myself, but everyone in general, we all go through those phases where like this, you know, like when I work in sales and this client's being like an asshole, I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. But like, whatever, okay, you know, don't let it like feel it in the moment, whatever, don't let it in, don't let it, you know, be that thing that drags you down and so on. I think that's really, really good and very refreshing advice, which I love. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Chang, man, I wanted to say thank you so, so much for coming on the show today. This has been a pleasure, you know, to speak to someone who the owner of the place that I love, which is sick to me.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. And thank you for what you're doing. If people want to connect with you, reach out to you, work with you, what's the best way to get in touch?
Probably Instagram DM, Subchanshin. Okay. Check us out. We have 1004, which is this Korean, Japanese, Asian supermarket. We have Cafe Bloom inside and Limis Beauty. Limis Beauty is my wife's Korean beauty concept. We have Ugly Burger opening in the Kill Mall, hopefully in end of September. And we're hoping to have a really cool space. We're going all out this time. Ugly Noodles, Ugly Noodles is a again a fun passion project between the Ugly Boys and then Chef Khalid. He's based in Abu Dhabi.
Okay.
So it's our kind of fun project, and we don't have a space. We just do pop-ups.
That's
in our friends' cafes. I actually have our meeting next.
On the next
location. So check us out at Ugly Noodles. And thanks for the support. Really, love talking to you. Made me feel so super comfortable. And thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
No, my pleasure, man. Guys, you heard it here first. If you're looking for any Asian products in Dubai, check out 1004 Gourmet. And they've got a bunch of stuff in there. As always, please follow, subscribe, share the podcast at hope.it.helps with two S's. And as always, guys, hope it helps. Peace.
Share it.
Share it. Yes.
Share it. It doesn't cost you anything. Just do it. Click on a button.
Awesome.